Welcome back to Upstate Health Link on Air. Linda Cohen along with you. Minimally invasive is the new watchword in medicine these days, and more areas of medical and surgical practices are specializing in getting things done with the least amount of trauma to the patient. This new approach has found itself into the world of radiology with the emphasis these days on interventional radiology. And joining us this morning to help us understand more about this approach is Dr. Shadi Zanati, an assistant professor of radiology at Upstate Medical University. Welcome, Dr. Zanati. Thanks for coming in today.
Thank you for having me.
So help us understand first, how our listeners understand, what exactly do we mean when we say interventional radiology?
So the way I explain it to my friends, mainly because I get that question a lot, is essentially, we do surgery, minimally invasive surgery using image guidance. And the image guidance essentially is X-ray, ultrasound, CAT scan, and MRI. We're using those modalities that when we're working with our catheters and wires, we're actually seeing everything we're doing without having any incisions or any open procedures the way the general surgeons normally do.
So when you say we're doing surgery, but I think that's the big distinction, you're doing it with the guidance of some kind of an imaging technique, like
exactly.
An endoscope or something that goes into the body, and you don't have to open the body.
Exactly. Now, the endoscope, when you use that, that's more for...
Oh, that's... Right.
That's a scope. For example, no, that's a good point that you bring up. So laparoscopy is the other thing about minimally invasive, where people put scopes to look into a body cavity. But they're still making incisions to put the scope in. With our specialty, we're actually using the same image guidance without actually making any incision, except putting a little needle hole. So if, for example, if I'm doing a procedure under ultrasound guidance, with the ultrasound guidance, I'm able to penetrate the skin to get to whatever, for example, mass or lesion that I want to actually fix without making an actual incision to put a probe in there or put a scope in there.
That's interesting. So how exactly do you achieve that? I mean, how do you get in there then without getting in there?
Exactly. Because of everything we use is catheters, needles, and wires, they're so small that we're able to navigate. And it depends on the organ system that we're working through. We also use X-ray dye, obviously, if you're doing things under X-ray guidance, for example, in angiograms. And essentially, you're getting a roadmap of where you're trying to get your catheter. And the catheters are so small. We're talking they're less than a centimeter in size when you're moving. And the needles that you're using are millimeters in diameter. They're very, very small to get there.
So these catheters basically are the things you actually insert through small needle holes.
Exactly.
And then do you put things through the catheter then?
Sometimes we do, depending on what kind of procedure we're doing.
Okay.
For example, if you're trying to kill a tumor or trying to, for example, if we're trying to work on a fibroid, we use these little small particles that actually stop the blood flow, for example, to the fibroid or to the tumor that we're trying to treat and essentially killing it without the surgeon having to go in and resect those.
So going back to what I initially said, it really is minimally invasive.
It is really minimally invasive. I would say, with all the procedures that we do, the biggest incision I've ever had to make was for a chest port, which is about a 2-centimeter incision.
That's incredible.
To put in a port. Everything else I do is essentially through needle poke marks.
That's really incredible. So help us understand. I mean, I think it's self-evident, but what are some, in your mind, the advantages then of doing it this way, interventionally?
Well, classically, obviously, less pain. Most of these procedures that we do not require general anesthesia. Just require what's called moderate sedation. Essentially, the patient is getting some medication in the intravenously, essentially to keep them very comfortable. They're asleep but arousable, but there's no tube down their throat, so recovery time from not having anesthesia is much faster. Because you're not using big incisions, you're using needles and catheters to do procedures, the pain is much less. And obviously, now that there's no incision, recovery for patients. And that's a big thing in this day and age. You know, people don't want loss of time from work. They want to get back to pursuing their regular life. They want to just go back to normal energy and continue on with their life. So their idea is, I don't need a big incision to do things.
And these days, it seems to me, in addition, you know, the longer you're in a hospital, sometimes the longer, you know, other things can develop.
Other problems start happening.
So faster in, faster out is...
And I also say this, and I want to make sure that, you know, the point of this is that as interventional radiologists, we encompass so many parts of the body. We essentially work on everywhere from head to toe, but we don't replace surgeons. We actually help them out, and we have different techniques to what they do. So sometimes a surgeon can say, I can do this way, But do you, Dr. Zanotti, for example, have a different way that you can do it more minimally invasive? And sometimes we say, yes, we can do this. And sometimes, unfortunately, we say, nope, we don't have a technique for this. So the idea, I wouldn't say, oh, we're definitely replacing surgeons. We can never replace a surgeon. But we have so many new techniques that now we can help them out with what they need to do with minimal pain and, I would say, morbidity to the patient. And that's what it is at the end.
So it's kind of augmentative.
Exactly.
It's additional options for the patient.
Additional options. And there's a lot of, I would say, cross spillage between what we do and what other surgeons do, that they are starting to learn a lot of our techniques and using them on their patients, saying that, you know, if I can't do this with open, let me learn some of the interventional techniques. And that happens a lot, mainly, for example, in vascular surgery. There's a lot of techniques between us and vascular surgery that are almost identical.
Yeah, I'm noticing more and more. I recently interviewed, actually, a cardiac surgeon who is using robotically guided intervention, you know, minimally invasive stuff, yes, to replace, I think, a mitral valve.
Exactly. I mean, there's a lot of techniques that, you know, they stem from using image guidance, which is mainly CT, ultrasound, X-ray, that I've already spoken about. But they've realized, well, this technology is available in the hospital. Why don't we also learn it? But they have to, and the techniques are actually published in our journals. And they're learning that technique, and they're applying it on their patients.
So there's a lot of overlap.
A lot of overlap.
I understand, for example, people like gastroenterologists are doing things that are entering the body using this interventional methodology from other organ systems to get at tumors and the like.
True. They classically do things, you know, they have their scopes, but they also try to, you know, when they put stents, for example, in something, let's take an example, somebody with a mass or a stricture in the esophagus and they're unable to swallow very well or eat very well. Classically, we used to go in there and put stents, and now the GI doctors, because these are their patients and they've learned these techniques and they're very good at them, now they're classically now doing all the stenting of that. And there's so much work to go around that everybody seems to be very happy in doing what they're doing.
Well, that would be the question, though, I would ask. I mean, in a sense, I mean, I know that historically there have been these silos or these definitions of what is a surgeon, what is a medical doctor, et cetera, et cetera.
Exactly.
Are you seeing the lines are blurred more?
The lines are definitely getting more and more blurred.
But is that a challenge to any particular group in your mind?
I wouldn't say a challenge per se. I think it's good that a lot of doctors are learning to do things interventionally, in the sense that, okay, they're not doing major interventional procedures, but they're doing the basic procedures. Let's take, for example, putting in what's called a central line, essentially a glorified IV, I say, in the neck for somebody who needs long-term, you know, fluids or antibiotics when they're in the hospital. Classically, we used to do all of these procedures blindly, which means we go by anatomic landmarks to put in this catheter. But over time, they realize, well, we can use an ultrasound machine and X-ray guidance to kind of guide the needle where it's going to, you know, not injure surrounding structures and catheters. And now across the board, you're noticing that surgery residents are starting to learn that, a lot of the medical residents are starting to learn. And the idea is not to take away from what the interventionalist does, but the idea is to do this safely with minimal morbidity to the patient. The idea is that we're always, the patient is first. And that's what we care about.
And it sounds like that's exactly what I'm hearing. Okay, that to the patient, this is overall beneficial to the patient.
I mean, there are procedures that we can only do, and nobody is going to take that from us. So we're happy to teach a lot of our techniques, because in the end, I want that patient to get the best that he can get.
Absolutely.
While he's at the hospital. And that's what's
so
important.
More and more people are really learning these kinds of minimally invasive procedures.
They are, and some of them who are uncomfortable say, "I'm sorry, you know, I'm from a different era." Let's send it to the people who know what they're doing. And that's what happens.
Let's talk specifically, I don't want to run out of time,
yeah,
about what are the kinds of things you do then, you yourself or within the field of IR?
So IR can, essentially, like I said, we cover from head to toe. But I go by specialties. For example, the major, you know, the big headlines for IR are oncologic IR. That means we're doing everything to do with cancer therapy.
So give us an example.
For example, patient comes in, he has a mass in the liver. You want a tissue sample. In the past, they used to have to go in, try to stick a needle blindly in there, or do open surgery to take a tissue sample. Now, using ultrasound or CAT scan guidance, I can insert a tiny needle, get a sample of that, send it to pathology. They can make a diagnosis what kind of cancer he has. The second step, example, that same patient requires some chemotherapy. So now we are putting in chest ports, which is the, you know, something buried underneath the skin that the patient can get, you know, the chemotherapy through that. A third example, which gets now more and more detailed and more complicated, especially in liver cancer and all the cancers that go to the liver, because that's the main siphon of where cancers go, is what's called chemoembolization and radioembolization. We're using these tiny, tiny particles, almost the size of sand particles, going with tiny catheters all the way through the groin, through the vasculature that feeds the liver, and putting that catheter right at where the tumor is, inside. And again, it's going through a tiny incision. The patient is no general anesthesia, one day stay in the hospital, and inserting these tiny particles that have either chemotherapy stuck to them or radiation therapy stuck to them. And now we're just feeding all the chemotherapy straight to the tumor.
Wow.
And so the patients are getting much less side effects of the chemotherapy that they get when they get it in the IV generally. And now we're doing direct tumor killing. And that's now the big field now in IRs interventional. Other subspecialties, obviously, is, you know, vascular interventional radiology, which is classically, you know, that's what really started interventional radiology back in the 70s.
And where they put stents in?
Essentially stents. You know, people always talk about, most people have heard of cardiac stents. You know, you go in with a little catheter into the heart, you do a little balloon, you put a stent, and people understand that. I tell people, we essentially are the cardiologists of the rest of the body. We do the exact same thing with catheters, stents, wires, balloons, to every other part of the body.
Wow.
Of all the other vessels.
So you also were talking, or I think I mentioned the idea of uterine fibroids. That's another area of expertise.
That's another area. So again, now we're going into taking care of women problems.
Right.
And one of the big problems for women, obviously, is uterine fibroids. Most patients, essentially, between the age of 35 to 50, have what's called symptomatic uterine fibroid.
So it's causing them trouble, bleeding, excessive bleeding, all kinds of things.
Exactly. And a fibroid essentially is a non-cancerous tumor growth of fibrous tissue and muscle that can occur anywhere in the female uterus. And you have up to 50% of patients are symptomatic. And when I say symptomatic, it's just like you said, they have excessive bleeding, sometimes over 7 days, passage of a lot of clots, severe abdominal cramping, and what we call bulk symptoms, depending on the size of these fibroids. If they're pressing on the bladder or the rectum, they can get constipation. Some people even mention that there's pain going down their legs. And that's what we can treat now,
so
minimally invasive.
Very briefly, how do you do it?
So again, I'm inserting a very small catheter through the vessel in the groin and the artery in the groin, and going with that catheter and injecting x-ray dye so I can get a roadmap of the vessels that feed the uterus. And we're injecting these tiny sand particles into the vessel that feeds the uterus. And those particles preferentially go to all the fibroids in the uterus and block the blood supply. Essentially,
wow.
I'm strangling the uterus and killing these fibroids.
Strangling the fibroids.
I'm strangling the fibroids. Thank
yeah.
you. The uterus preferentially does not get affected
yeah.
because the beads go preferentially to the fibroids. And so I'm actually destroying the fibroid that's big and the fibroid that's just starting up and tiny.
Amazing.
And that's what we do different than, you know, the way normally patients who have fibroids either have to go in for surgery, which either includes the surgeon trying to pluck out, you know, one or two of the big fibroids, or sometimes the patient having to lose her whole uterus so that she becomes asymptomatic from this procedure.
You know, this is all amazing, and I would love to have more and more time to talk to you about it, but unfortunately we were running out of time. It's really incredible. It strikes me, though, that there had to have been something in a kind of a in the chemical or the medical chemistry of this to allow these so-called particles to be developed as well, that for you to be able to carry those so-called targeted
yes,
particles.
Exactly.
But I see that more and more targeted therapy is being done in cancer and in a lot of these things.
Yeah.
Yeah. As well.
The last thing I want, you know, as being upstate, just to mention that we are a level one trauma center, and we work very closely with surgeons for patients who have a lot of trauma to their spleen, to the pelvis, and we use those same particles to stop any bleeding from that location.
Amazing. Well, I thank you so much for coming in. My guest has been Dr. Shadi Zanati, an assistant professor of radiology at Upstate Medical University, with so much good information. We'll be right back with more HealthLink on Air after this short break, so please stay with us.